Welcome to the conversation.org, making sense of these times web radio program.
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great. With a click.
You're listening to our series of Suzanne's readings from Brian Swim's The Universe is a Green Dragon. We would love to hear from you. Email us at suzanne@mightycompanions.org. And now, here she is, Suzanne Taylor.
Well, here we are around the campfire for episode number 5 of the story of how we human beings fit into the cosmic process. How do we experience the life of our being that's 30 billion years old? We're pretty adept these days at going in and looking for the spirit and the soul and this inner quest. But the other half of that is our place in this vast universe of a miracle. The miracle isn't just the soul space of our hookup, but our very presence in this incredible creation. And The Universe is a Green Dragon is the best book that I have ever read that gives you the sense of majesty, that imbues you with the actual visceral feeling for how it is to be the miracle. The book started demonstrating that we're in a revelatory experience. The universe is happening as we speak, as we listen. It's still revealing itself. This is a magical mystery that we're involved in, not just a dead thing that we're going to own and possess. And that everything hangs together for what Brian Swim calls allurement. Allurement is the attraction things feel for one another. Think gravity. And allurement, well, you might not make too big a stretch to call that love. And the next big idea that Brian introduces is the idea of enchantment. That as we're aware, humans being the only species that is aware of awareness, how enchanting an idea is that? To be conscious of the awesome nature of our very existence. And the next big thread that he introduces is evil from cosmic risk. Where did bad come from? And he incorporates that very beautifully into the idea that it sends us to our depths from which we can find our heights. And then he introduces what he calls epiphanies of the earth. We've read see, think of all these vast masses on earth, these vast aspects of earth. So see is one of them that he works with. And see is the metaphor, or the metaphor for see is cosmic sensitivity, where everything is so sensitive to everything else. Look at what water is all about. Sea being the way water appears as this stuff that surrounds us, the earth stuff that surrounds us. And these are the qualities that are in us as human beings. The sea and the quality of cosmic sensitivity is what we are, dissolving the universe all the time. We're not a stuck thing. In this creative process, everything's always dissolving and reforming, and we're always being born. We're on land, and land, is cosmic memory in Brian's very creative schema and original schema. Where would we be if we didn't realize where we came from, if we were just blipped into existence from nowhere, which is in some sense the blindness that we do suffer from? The land he uses as the hard matter of things in which memory is stored as the metaphor for that. And our memory, of course, really is all that we are. And then the next big track of his epiphanies of the earth is life. Life, he translates, this quality of being the spark of movement inside the sea and the land, he equates that to adventurous play. What does life give us? Well, you could say many things, couldn't you? I mean, endless things you could say. Oh, life is this, life is that. Well, isn't it interesting that Brian equates it with adventurous play? And that's the task of the human. This human that has memory and sensitivity, that has all the equipment. Now, what's it going to do with the equipment? Adventurous play, the discovery of things, the getting better all the time. That is where we came to at the end of reading 4. Now we're going on to reading 5. And reading 5 is called Fire. You. You know, I was just listening to you, and I realized something very strange. I was excited, and I thought of becoming a master of play. I don't even know what that is, but I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if there were schools somewhere that taught humans how to become true masters at the art of play? Now, what was so strange was this idea didn't appear strange. Do you see? Never in my life have I considered such a thing. And if anyone suggested it to me, I'd think they were crazy. But here I was, actually thinking about it in a serious way. Isn't that strange? Thomas, that you would come up with the idea of becoming a master of play? Yes, no. I mean, which was the real me? The one before who would have thought the idea was just crazy? Or the one now who thinks it's a possibility? Thomas, which you is your true self? Yeah, says you. Thomas, well, the strange thing is that your true self is never the content of whatever you happen to be thinking or feeling. Wow, says Suzanne, isn't this a pure Advaita idea? All of these Advaita teachers that are around now, Advaita meaning not to. We are flooded with teachers, mostly that go back to Ramana Maharshi, who introduced this idea in the big way into Western thought of the non-dual nature of things in this way of self-reflection, who am I being the question to ask, rather than what am I looking for, what's outside me, it's all inside me. And Brian here, in this colloquial passage of little conversation where they're talking about who's the true self, and he's right on this eons-old definition that rather popularized, you might say, by Ramana Maharshi, who died in 1950. And since then, this has become sort of the ascendant idea on the spiritual circuit, and the whole notion of non-duality and that we are one, and that oneness is yourself inside yourself, and that when you hook up with what you've been looking for, it's you you've been looking for. So, little brief trip on spiritual circuitry here. I'll read again what Thomas says. Well, the strange thing is that your true self is never the content of whatever you happen to be thinking or feeling. You're not your body, says Suzanne. You're not your thoughts. You're not anything but this essential essence which has a body and has thoughts. Thomas continues, no matter how well you get to know yourself, you will never be able to say what this self is. We create images of the self all the time, but they're just images. Think about it a moment. If you could say what this self is, then what is doing the saying? Something behind the very speaking or understanding. And this is the way the teachers guide you into this awareness. They show you that there's a thinker. And who is that? It's a pure process. And, hey, that's what we might call God. If you focus on that, everything opens up to this allness, oneness, eternality. Youth says, this is confusing. Thomas says, yourself is an organizing activity. Yourself is not that which is organized and given form. You just said that you are pondering this possibility of master of play. This new synthesis is offered up by the self-organizing capacity that you are. The self can never be captured completely in language, ideas, images, or creative productions. On the contrary, it is the self that is the very doing of all these things, the power of fashioning all these things. Well, I just love this description, says Suzanne, that Brian is offering up. You could spend a lot of money on workshops to get a tracking to this emptiness that Brian has just taken you into. Thomas goes on, what we need to do is look at the universe as a whole, examining the self within the context of the emergent universe. We are involved with the discussion of another cosmic dynamic, one best revealed in the presence of fire. What is fire, anyway? Consider a burning candle, the wispy black smoke rising steadily above the yellow-orange light, the wick, black at the top, white beneath, the wax, liquid on top of the candle, solid beneath, vaporous around the wick area. What is the flame? Is it the light given off in all directions? The wax as it combines with oxygen? The chemical products resulting from this combination? Youth, can't we just say that the flame is all of those things taken together? Thomas, no, not exactly. They show the flame's activity, but consider this. If I alter the thickness of the wick and the composition of the wax, the entire display alters. The color and temperature of the light and vapor will change. Yet, we still recognize it as a flame. The flame organizes all these different materials into its own persisting process. A flame is an image of unseen organizing activity. We say that the flame is this organizing activity. It shows itself by organizing materials in a particular way. If the materials are altered, the various conditions change, the flame can still show itself with these new materials. The flame is an activity, a self-organizing power that spontaneously erupts and shows itself whenever it is able to. You are similar to that flame. Now here's Brian at his most beautiful. You're taken into the elemental forces of the universe and shown how you are the expression of them. So you become part and parcel of this incredible process. Okay, you are similar to this flame, says Thomas. Here you are in the universe, and so long as particular conditions obtain, food, air, beauty, interest, the promise of adventure, you leap into existence. You show yourself in the manner in which you organize the materials of your world, your ideas and feelings, body and relationships. You are not just the things you do, not just the thoughts you think, the convictions you hold. You are that which shapes all of these. You are a power, creating the whole complex work of art that is your life, your manifestation in the world. Youth, and now you're saying that this self-organizing activity is another cosmic dynamic? Thomas, that's right. Youth, and this is found primarily in the higher animals? Thomas, it's found everywhere. That's why we call it a cosmic dynamic. And why I chose fire as revealing this dynamic. When we are in the presence of flame, we are in the presence of unseen organizing activity. Youth, are there other examples of this? Thomas, of course. A tornado is an extremely powerful presence of self-organizing activity. The tornado continues, whether it's over a desert, farmland, or the ocean. It organizes all sorts of materials into a process that we recognize as a tornado. It resists attempts to break it up, just as you would resist attempts to break up your existence. The tornado, the flame, you, each an organized process in which parts are drawn into a whole, and the whole itself is involved in this persisting activity. Youth, you talk as if the tornado has a self. Thomas, what is a self? Youth, I am. I'm aware of what I'm doing. Thomas, you are self-reflexively aware, yes, but a week-old infant is not. Nevertheless, we regard a human infant as a self. Youth, then what is a self? Thomas, unseen shaping. Oh, that gives me goosebumps. This is it. Just picture yourself. You're this force of unseen shaping. It arises from you. It is the primal, creative ongoing, unfolding you-ness. Anything's potential within it. Back to Thomas. Self may not be the best word for this activity, but we need to bring to mind the autonomous centers of activity found all about us. A flame is unseen shaping, as is a tornado. They exhibit a fundamental dynamic of the universe that we tend to overlook. That is why I prefer to think of the flame as a self. A tree is a self. It is unseen shaping more than it is leaves or bark, roots or cellulose or fruit. The tree as a self organizes all these millions of operations so that it can enter into relationships with air, rainfall, and sunlight. What organizes all these materials? Is it something we can see? Something we can grab onto? No. The same with humans. Who organized your thoughts so that you were suddenly contemplating becoming a master of play? We cannot point to anything physical and say, there is the self. This holds for the tree's activity as well as for the humans. What it means is that we must address trees. We must address all things, confronting them in the awareness that we are in the presence of numinous mystery. Who shapes the tree? Who shapes my thoughts? We are in the mystery of the self. So all your spiritual teachers, says Suzanne, put you there, invite you there, guide you there, and you get to see that this is God, a name for unseen shaping. Youth, but the tree doesn't know I'm addressing it. Thomas, how do you know? But I'm not worried about the tree here. I'm worried about humans. We need to address trees and all things. We are the ones who forget awe, mystery, and the astonishment of being. We think of trees as firewood, as pre-plywood, as unvarnished hardwood floors. We've convinced ourselves that they are just inert stuff, standing there for 20 years until we get around to cutting them down. We're deluded. We must face the mystery of unseen shaping. The tree has its own destiny in the forest, its own life, its own fate, one that takes place entirely outside our little two-legged projects. The tree is made of the materials of the same supernova as you. It drifted through space right along with you, mingling with the very elements of your body. And now it exists in the form of a tree, with its own hopes for rainfall and sunshine and all that it needs. It knows exactly what it needs, and if these are supplied, it leaps to the task of showing its presence. If it cannot get what it desires, it certainly suffers, shrivels up, and dies. Youth, I can't imagine what I'm supposed to say to a tree. Thomas, don't say a thing. Close your mouth in the presence of the trees. Just think. Stand there and think to yourself, there you are, tree, growing, developing, enjoying rain and sunshine and soil. I don't know what your life is like, standing out here all night in the snow, owls scraping your bark, or standing there soaking up tons of sunlight. I don't even know what it's like to hope for sunshine or stand helpless with a forest fire blazing your way. I can't even imagine the joy you might feel when the sun shines and all your vast processes of life churn forward, throwing out tons of water, producing such complex seeds. But whatever destiny you are to live, I want you to go on living it. Whatever relationships you enjoy with the earth's vitality, I want you to go on enjoying them. I don't know what my own destiny is, nor what relationships I will enjoy in the future, but together we make up part of this vast mystery of the earth's life, and that is enough for now. Close quote to a tree. Thomas goes on, remember that the tree doesn't need to be addressed. It's you that needs to address the tree. You are the universe, pressing into an awareness of itself. It's your task to become deeply aware of trees and of all that is. Youth. Okay, a human is a self, a tree, a flame. Thomas, everything. There is no thing that does not exist outside unseen shaping activity. Consider an atom. No one has to teach an electron about S and P orbitals. Bring electrons, protons, and neutrons together in the right conditions, and you see the helium self appear. Unseen shaping organizes the particles into the stable community of the helium atom or any other atom. If these atoms then experience any number of stressful situations, they adjust so that they can maintain themselves. They absorb or radiate energy, alter and organize themselves so that they perdure. That is what a self does. Self organizes. Isn't that nice? That is what a self does. Self organizes. Did you ever think of it that way? All right, self organize. We are self-organizing, but this is a nice little wrinkle. Okay, self, keep it up. Suzanne self, you self, all selves. Well, they will now, won't they? The issue is to do it well. Thomas goes on. Atoms and flames, tornadoes and trees, each presents a centered, unseen, shaping dynamism. Woo! Youth, but why didn't I learn that an atom had a self? Thomas, we never knew much about atoms. Newton spoke of atoms as dead, massy balls. See, this is important. This is the new reality that we can come into, says Suzanne. We can understand anew because science has given us permission, you might say, or verification. We have a different idea from science, a different knowing from science. How would we think of self as a lively thing in all things if we think those things are dead? But when we discover that atoms have this aliveness to them, well, we can think of the force that shaped them as alive. So, starting again in the section on Thomas, we never knew much about atoms. Newton spoke of atoms as dead, massy balls. Dalton hypothesized the existence of atoms in the 19th century to explain various phenomena, but it was not until the 20th century that we got close to the life of an atom. And for the last decades, we've been so enthralled by the dynamism we found there that we never step back long enough to recognize the similarity between an atom's self-organizing powers and that of, say, a tree. And here, Suzanne says, is the great gift of Brian. Yay, Brian, to point this out to us in this exquisitely dramatic and easily comprehensible fashion. Thomas goes on. A similar situation holds in our relationship with the Earth. We have never had the opportunity to study the whole Earth in an empirical manner before. Only now are we finally realizing that the Earth is a self as well. The Earth is a self-organizing process of astounding complexity and achievement. Now, this is our Gaian idea, says Suzanne, with which we are all acquainted. It's one thing, breathing as a whole, making itself up, progressing. Back to Thomas. The Earth is a self-organizing process of astounding complexity and achievement. It's a matter of intimacy. The closer we get to an understanding of the dynamism of the integral Earth, the more obvious it becomes that the 4.5 billion years of terrestrial evolution resembles, that's evolution on Earth, right? Because it's 30 billion years since the Big Bang. So in the 4.5 billion years, says Thomas, of terrestrial evolution resembles one vast embryogenesis. We're like an embryo evolving. Suzanne's aside. Thomas, something is developing, hatching, unfolding, and we are the self-reflexive mind and heart of the whole numinous process. Youth. But what have we learned that showed that the Earth is a self? Thomas, we've learned, for instance, that the Earth has maintained a steady temperature over some 3 billion years. I say maintain the temperature. I mean by this the same self-organizing activity that enables the flame to maintain its process under varying conditions. The earth has been heated by the sun, of course, but the sun has not remained the same temperature. The sun's temperature has soared during the earth's existence, rising at least 25% of its original temperature. The earth has responded to changes in conditions, adjusted, just as the atom, or tree, or flame adjust to new situations. The earth organizes its materials so that it can maintain the narrow band of conditions, enabling its life to unfold and continue. Youth, how do we know the temperature on earth has always been in that narrow band? Thomas, the cybernetic system of energy exchange on the earth is extremely sensitive to any change in temperature. Even a 2-degree drop in the average temperature of the earth would lead to conditions that would freeze the earth into solid ice. Youth, but why couldn't Mars or Jupiter do the same thing? Thomas, they tried. Mars' evolution continued for billions of years. In the beginning, its processes in many ways resembled the earth's, but it was unable to continue with its evolution and has all but completely stopped. The situation is again similar to the flame. A flame will leap forth any place in the universe where a particular band of conditions is available. Put wax, oxygen, wick together under certain pressures and temperatures, and the flame will leap into action. So too with planets. A narrow band was maintained by Earth because Earth began in the right place with the right materials. Mars was close, but unable to locate itself within these conditions. Youth. This is amazing. I see what you mean about the nature of this revolution. Thomas, for so long we've considered the earth as just a big dead ball of dirt. It shocks us nearly out of our minds when we discover we're involved within something that moves. Copernicus said the earth moved. He meant that it moved around the sun. When we say the earth moves, we mean the whole process is alive. The earth moves. In a sentence, that is the heart of our cosmic revolution. See, this is the cusp, says Suzanne, that we're on, where everything gets redefined. We are evolving as the edge of something. The most exciting creative thing humans are, the most complex thing, the latest thing of complexity to come along. Self-reflexive awareness is the latest quality of suchness, of inexplainable force that comes from an inexplicable source that finally devolves in mystery. This is the quest we're on since we know that we are part of this process. We are on an expansive quest for discovering ourselves, for learning more of ourselves, for attuning ourselves to this vast process since we know there is one going on. And before that, that wasn't what we were up to. Why we need a new story that holds this beautiful, ennobling loveliness that is the core of the process going on today. But we're stuck in an old story where it was a dead ball. Youth asks, but how does the earth do this? How does the earth organize itself? Where is the earth acting to do this? Thomas, in your allurements, your hopes, especially in your deepest dreams for the future. Youth, but how, Thomas interrupts, the whole process is present in the individual creature. The dynamics that fashion the fireball and the galaxies also fashion your ideas and visions. I don't mean this in a crude sense. The whole system of life and being presents itself in each particular event as well. In your specific personal dreams and desires, the whole process is present in your own personal self. The macrocosm is not disconnected from the microcosm. Youth, but how? I don't see how this happens. Thomas, it would be impossible for you to understand easily this larger view of reality's dynamics. Reality's dynamics, isn't that nice? Says Suzanne. Don't we love exploring reality's dynamics, and don't we want to know how they work so that we tune in and work with them, go in the direction the horses galloping. Okay, back to Thomas. We have been instructed for centuries in an atomistic point of view that does not allow for the understanding of the presence of the whole in the individual. But we can consider an actual example from Earth processes that will point our attention in the right direction. The oxygen content of our atmosphere is near 21%. This has been maintained for over a billion years. How did it get this way? The metabolic processes of the first microorganisms on the planet, the prokaryotes, added oxygen to the atmosphere and slowly increased the percentage. If these creatures could have continued unabated, the oxygen content of the atmosphere would obviously be much higher, but there came a point when the concentration of oxygen was too much for them, and they ceased being the dominant creatures of Earth. They dove to the bottoms of ponds or hid inside other creatures. On the other hand, if these prokaryotes had been unable to continue as long as they did, the oxygen content would be much lower than it is today. The interesting point is that the present concentration of oxygen on Earth depends on the genetic capabilities and limitations of prokaryotes. No one came and told them to stop making oxygen when such and such a concentration was reached. They just carried on with all their delight in living until the conditions became too noxious for their own genetically anchored limitations. They organized themselves, all these little cells, within the first eons of the Earth, and continued to do just that without any awareness of the consequences of their activities for the Earth. But in our century, we have learned something about this level of oxygen in our atmosphere. If the concentration of oxygen were increased by only several percentage points, the conditions would become such that a single lightning stroke could turn an entire forest, an entire continent, into flames. On the other hand, if the concentration of oxygen were significantly lower than its present level, we would not have the large supply of chemical potential energy necessary for advanced forms of animal life. The Earth created an atmosphere that provided as much chemical potential as possible for the creation of the animal kingdom, while avoiding a situation of total terrestrial catastrophe in the spontaneous outburst of raging fires. This is astonishing, truly. But we need in particular to think of those little microorganisms that produce the oxygen. How did they know to stop? They knew nothing of the macro structure of the biosphere. They knew only their own allurements in the midst of their own unseen shaping powers. The whole Earth system was present in the microorganism. The macro structure was present in the intrinsic genetic limits of the microstructure. Isn't that astonishing? Youth. But how did the Earth... Thomas, we don't know. We are so unaccustomed to thinking in terms of whole systems that for now, we can only guess. The point I want to emphasize is the fascinating interconnection of the whole Earth process. Now, isn't this fascinating, says Suzanne? How did the whole process know to unfold itself in a way that worked? And is this something known all over the universe so that it just replicates? But look, we had to be just the right distance from the sun. All the conditions had to be right. It was such a delicate rightness. But then the Earth itself became the mediator and the moderator out of this knowingness that could actually juggle this narrow band of possibility to keep giving rise to itself. And there we're in ultimate mystery. Will we ever penetrate that? We can only live its implications. Hard to think we will ever penetrate that, not given to the human. Fascinating to speculate. All right, back to Thomas. We are so unaccustomed to thinking in terms of whole systems that for now we can only guess. The point I want to emphasize is the fascinating interconnection of the whole Earth process. The prokaryotes are not separate from the atmosphere. The complex multicellular forms, or the Earth as a self-organizing entity. You know, just like says Suzanne, the acorn gives you the oak. The prokaryotes gave you the human. Thomas, I think we should take the prokaryote as the mascot of the emerging era of the Earth. What better organism to symbolize the vast, intricate mystery of Earth's embryogenesis? What creature can better remind us that our own desires are rooted in Earth's desires? Youth, I have to become like a prokaryote? Thomas, don't say it with such a grimace. Let's just hope we can emulate some of the achievements of the prokaryotes. Youth, in what ways? To begin with, it would be wonderful if we could contribute something as essential to the Earth's life as oxygen. All the animals depend on the prokaryotes' creativity. Do you think Homo sapiens could match that one? Or even come close to the value of our little microscopic cousins? Secondly, we must act on our innate desires with the confidence that these are not disconnected from the Earth's process as a whole. We are just now discovering a deep disgust with the industrial excesses of our consumer society. This disgust is genetically anchored, just as the cancers and other industrial diseases are genetically anchored. Our disgust and our diseases are Earth's way of making clear for us what activities are required. Thirdly, and most importantly, we must embrace and cherish our dreams for the Earth. We are creating with our imaginations a period of rebuilding, where the intercommunication of all species will guide our life's activities. We must come to understand that these dreams of ours do not originate in our brains alone. We are the space where the Earth dreams. We are the imagination of the Earth, that precious realm where visions and organizing hopes can be spoken with a discriminating awareness not otherwise present in the Earth system. We are the mind and heart of Earth, only insofar as we enable Earth to organize its activities through self-reflexive awareness. That is our larger destiny, to allow the Earth to organize itself in a new way, in a manner impossible through all the billions of years preceding humanity. Who knows what rich possibilities await a planet and its heart and mind that have achieved this vastly more rich and complex mode of life? Well, that's a good question on which Brian ends his fire section. What is our possibility? What is our contribution? What are humans to do? We're going to delve deeper into that in the next section of these epiphanies of the Earth, the cosmic powers that run through the Earth, the forces that are nature's forces that Brian equates to the energy of us and what runs through us. And the next one is wind. Thomas, our last cosmic dynamic is revealed by the wind. Wind is created as heat moves from place to place. The entire universe expands in just this way. If we look into the night sky, we see that the galaxies are all moving away from us. The further away the galaxy, the faster it rushes away. This is the result of the initial explosion of the primeval fireball, when all matter was in a terrifically hot and dense form. It has all been rushing away from itself for 20 billion years. Wind reveals the cosmic dynamic of expansion out from an area of high concentration. This dynamic creates the winds on our planet and in the macrostructure of the cosmos, the expansion of the universe. Youth, does this dynamic have a name? Thomas, it's usually called the second law of thermodynamics. For instance, if you heat the center of a sheet of metal with a blowtorch, heat rushes away in all directions from the center. Heat will not stay bottled up in one spot. A similar situation in the realm of elementary particles is referred to as Pauli's exclusion principle. Some elementary particles do not pile up on each other, but push off into separate states of being. In the biological realm, ethologists call a similar situation dispersal behavior, where juveniles are sent out in a programmed dispersal from the occupied territory of their ancestors. All these different words are the legacy of our splitting up of the world to study it from many points of view, a powerful analytic method to be sure, but one that makes it difficult to form a single coherent picture of the whole. See, this is what Brian is beautiful for. All these elemental forces that he speaks to are giving you vast kind of containers that hold everything, as opposed to what we are so used to in our fragmented world of this is called that and that's called the other, and they're different fields, and yet the processes and dynamics of these fields echo one another, and you're getting the master vibrations here from Brian. Thomas continues, we similarly fragment allurement. In the physical realm, we call it gravitation. In the biological, instinct. And in the human, interest. So think of that, says Suzanne. Gravitation, pulling us down. Instinct, attracting us to one another. Interest, sending us out individually into a connecting activity. And Brian has them all identified as the same kind of thing. So you and gravitation are one. Pulled along. Impelled along. Energized along. Youth. Is there a word that fits the human? One that points to the cosmic dynamic of wind? Yes. Exuberance. When you fall in love, don't you experience an irrepressible need to give expression to this joy in some way? Your outrush of poetic utterances is the human analog to the outrush of the galaxies from a region of extreme concentration. We can refer to the cosmic dynamic as a single activity called celebration. I mean, in particular, celebration as announcing, as we celebrate a new discovery in some field of science. Celebration captures the basic dynamic of expansion from a center with news of that center. The basic movement is from a region richer in being to one poorer. All the elements were at one time concentrated in the core of a star and were then sent flooding off in all directions toward the surrounding element poor regions of space. Young lions are born and nurtured in a particular spot on the Serengeti Plains, then let loose to roam into the less populated regions. All the insights of Buddhists were concentrated on one spot of the Indian subcontinent, then released as men and women trekked into China and radiated out to Tibet and Southeast Asia, announcing the news. Superconcentration of being naturally unfolds and expands. Youth. A supernova is dense in elements, I can see that. And wind requires a high concentration of heat. But what does the human have in such great concentration? Thomas. Being. Or, more simply, the universe. After a person has soaked in the presence of something, there is simply more there. More of the universe, youth asks? Thomas, yes, the universe is more intensely present, desiring to explode out in celebration of itself. When you have been in the forest for a while, deepening your sensitivity to the forest's presence, the richness concentrated in you cannot be contained. You radiate forest wherever you go, whether or not you say a single word. It would be hopeless to try and stop this natural outpouring of being. As useless as trying to stop the wind or trying to prevent the expansion of the galaxies, being folds itself into concentrated fullness, then erupts into an explosion of joy. The artist sends forth her works. The parent lavishes care upon his children. So isn't this beautiful, says Suzanne. We think of kind of amping ourselves up with the beauty that surrounds us, becoming present to it, becoming aware, soaking in, whether we do it by meditating, by any practices we do, by ritual, by opening our eyes, by knowing that we are to attend to what's around us and not just use stuff. All of a sudden, we can acquire this concentration that can then pour out. It's science, but we don't usually think of it this way. This is thanks to Brian that we can eat science this way. You says, I love this. Just like Suzanne does. Is this all new? Thomas says, not really. The understanding of being within the cosmic creation story, yes. Being's innate urgency to unfold has been appreciated in different forms. Classical theologians spoke of supreme beings' ontological desire to pour forth goodness, to share and ignite being spontaneously. They explained the human desire to share life and being as participating in supreme being, in divine reality. Youth, so this desire to share and to serve as a source of goodness is real or innate, basic? It's just the way things are, even physically. Thomas, anchored in the universe, a dynamic of the cosmos. Youth, we don't have to learn it. This desire to pour out goodness is just the way things are? Thomas, yes. And even to this degree, perhaps the most spectacular illustration of the cosmic dynamic of celebration is the eruption of being out of sheer emptiness. Remember how elementary particles spontaneously erupt out of no-thingness, the ultimate realm of generation? Emptiness is permeated with the urgency to leap forth. I got that one underlined and starred. Emptiness is permeated with the urgency to leap forth. The difficulty is with language. When we say emptiness, we fail to evoke any sense of awe for the truth of that matter. We can use another word. The ground of being is generosity. The ultimate source of all that is, the support and well of being, is ultimate generosity. All being comes forth and shines, glimmers and glistens, because the root reality of the universe is generosity of being. Boy, is that different from original sin, gang, where we're here as bad guys having to get good. And here we are, Suzanne is saying, in the root reality of generosity of being. We are not absent of it. We only block it. This is such a different idea. This is the new story. Back to Thomas, that's why the ground of being is empty. Everything has been given over to the universe. All existence has been poured forth. All being has gushed forth because ultimate generosity retains no thing. Boy, these are interesting definitions. Ultimate generosity is so gushing giving that you're always in this astonishing creativity. What a hot action of the human. You, wait a minute, I just have to stop and think about this. I have so many questions. This cosmic dynamic of celebration and generosity, we're supposed to develop this, right? Thomas, it was out of the dynamic of cosmic celebration that we were created in the first place. We are to become celebration and generosity. Burst into self-awareness. What is the human? The human is a space, an opening, where the universe celebrates its existence. Youth, but how are we to develop this? Thomas, in a sense, this power is the culmination of the others. To remember the beauty of the universe, to enhance your sensitivity to the magnificence of the earth, to pursue the central allurement of your life, all lead to a super concentration of being, with its inevitable desire to celebrate itself. Generosity and celebration reveal the presence of the other dynamics because they each reveal the presence of the universe in superabundant form. Youth, what should I celebrate? Thomas, to ask that question is to weaken your powers. You never have to ask anyone else what or why to celebrate. The dynamic of celebration celebrates, that's all. Self-expression is the primary sacrament of the universe. Whatever you deeply feel demands to be given form and released. Profound joy insists upon song and dance. Don't ask anyone what to celebrate. Don't even ask yourself. Let celebration be. Let generosity of being happen. Nothing more is required. Take supernovas as your models. When they had filled themselves with riches, they exploded in a vast cosmic celebration of their work. What would you have done? Would you have had the courage to flood the universe with your riches? Or would you have talked yourself out of it by pleading that you were too shy? Or hoarded your riches by insisting that they were yours and that others did not deserve them because they did not work for them? Remember the supernova's extravagant generosity and celebration of being. It reminds us of our destiny as celebration becomes self-aware. We are a generosity of being evolved into human form. You are the elementary particles of the fireball, elements of the supernovas, and the generosity of the ground of all being. That is your fundamental nature. Our deepest desire is to share our riches, and this desire is rooted in the dynamics of the cosmos. See, when we don't appreciate each other, says Suzanne, when we're indifferent to each other, when we slam each other around, and here we are, fundamentally, with the deepest desire to share our riches, and doors get closed in our faces, which is this kind of nastiness of the contemporary scene, which climbs and closes rather than receives and opens. Where is the appreciation that each of us could have for each other, the fertile soil of the growth of the human? And Thomas continues here, I have this little section starred also. What began as the outward expansion of the universe in the fireball ripens into your desire to flood all things with goodness. Whenever you are filled with a desire to fling your gifts into the world, you have become this cosmic dynamic of celebration, feeling its urgency to pour forth, just as the stars felt the same urgency to pour themselves out. We know we feel this, whereas the star simply feels it and responds. Youth. How do I know what I had to celebrate is worthwhile? Thomas, every song has tremendous value. Learn to sing. Learn to see your life and work as a song by the universe. Dance. See our most ordinary activities as the dance of the galaxies and all living beings. Your most ordinary activities, Suzanne says. Wow! We could tune into that. It's kind of walking meditation, but not in solemn fashion, but in celebratory style. Oh, I like it. So Thomas goes on, if we attempt to constrain the self-emergent expressions of joy, we bottle up the exuberance of the universe. Imagine trying to hold back a supernova. It's the same with human celebration, generosity, and creativity. Try to bottle them up, and you only get neurosis and destruction. Think of the unborn of today and tomorrow, all the future generations, and all the possible species. They, too, are waiting for the exuberant generosity of being. They are dependent upon it, just as you were dependent upon the generosity of the supernova 5 billion years ago. Fall in love. Sink into intimacy with all things. Explore the relationships throughout the Earth's realm. Pursue your dreams and flood all creatures with goodness. Wow, Suzanne says, this is your obligation as the great chain of being. You are like the prokaryotes that emerge into the whole universe. You emerge into the universe now, so carry your job. You, with self-reflexive awareness, have the first capacity to deny the cosmic destiny that you are. All the others did it by instinct, but now you have to agree. A wrinkle in the scheme of things. But this is your task. Youth says, I don't know whether to be excited or angry. There's so much. I am so full of questions and plans, and I know it's going to leak away. I know I forget so much of this. Can you help me remember somehow? And I call this part now summary to the end of the section on wind, a couple of pages. Thomas says, we are talking about powers, and we've discussed six of them all together. Allurement, sensitivity, memory, adventurous play, unseen shaping, and celebration. Now, that's not too much to remember, is it? Youth, no, that's easy enough. Thomas, we've pointed out ways in which they are presented to us, that is, we looked at the night sky and reflected on allurement. We examined the seas and talked of absorption, assimilation, and sensitivity in general. Youth, yes, yes, keep going. Thomas, we saw the dynamic of memory in the way the land remembers. We looked at the life forms and found there the presence of adventurous play in exploration, free activity, and imagination. Remember the human as the baby of the universe? Youth, yes, okay. Thomas, then we considered the flame, probing the meaning of the self, seeing in each of these the presence of unseen shaping. Finally, we considered wind, and saw there the expansion of being, the dynamic of celebration. So, the night sky, sea, land, life forms, fire, wind. That's easy enough to remember. Youth, but now I have two lists to memorize. Thomas, forget them. But you'll have to remember them very carefully in order to do that. I want you to glance at the night sky and see the cosmic dynamic of allurement intuitively. The night sky continuously utters a single word, and that is allurement. This will have to be learned, then forgotten, then known. Because you were raised in the modern anthropocentric period, you have hardly ever looked at the night sky, let alone understood that the night sky speaks to you of the central dynamic of the cosmos. In the same way, you can come to establish yourself in a relationship with the mountains, so that to glance at them is to be reminded of the cosmic dynamic of memory. The mountains and the rocks shout ceaselessly, "Remember!" Whenever water rushes over your body, it brings into your presence the reality of cosmic sensitivity and your destiny as the mind and heart of the universe. When the wind blows coolly in your face, you are feeling the activity of generosity, reminded of the great joy and destiny of celebration. And whenever you feel sunlight on your arms, you are reminded of that great cosmic flame, the unseen shaping of which permeates you and connects you to the embryogenesis of the earth. In this next paragraph, I marked it, and each time I've read the book, I highlight it again. And I've written next to it, "We need a new human," as what it's about. It starts that way. We need a new human in a new earth, creating and entering new relationships with the primary realities of the universe. In the most obvious meaning, all our difficulty as a species on this planet stems from our false relationships with winds, seas, life, sunlight, and land. It's not that we're bad. We've simply been trying to live outside our true relationships with these primordial cosmic presences. Well, I just love that paragraph. Just seems to me to give us the whole gestalt that we need a new relationship with all of these elemental forces, a new understanding of them, and a new story, which incorporates that way that it is. And then just a few more sentences here, also highlighted to the end of Wind. Thomas says, "But as you move into the full universe, you will discover something stupendous. All these powers are yours. They cost nothing. They do not depend on the color of your skin, the name of your religion, or your place of birth. The further development of the Earth community depends upon our ripening as a species, but nothing is more natural for the human person to accomplish. We sometimes fall into the delusion that power is elsewhere, that it belongs to a different group, that we are unable to find access to it. Nothing could be further from the truth. The universe oozes with power, waiting for anyone who wishes to embrace it. But because the powers of cosmic dynamics are invisible, we need to remind ourselves of their universal presence. Who reminds us? The rivers, plains, galaxies, hurricanes, lightning branches, and all our living companions." Oh, isn't this beautiful? That's the end of Wind. And next time we're going to end the book. The last section is called The End of the Fireball. Under that is Societal Transformation and Geological Activity and the Art of Forging Cosmic Fire. So we're going to get our marching orders in the next section so that we become the instruments for the retelling of the story of the human in which we can find ourselves in joy and peace and oneness.
Thank you for listening to the conversation.org making sense of these times. Now that you've heard from us, we'd love to hear from you. Click the feedback button on the show's webpage and share your thoughts. We'll be posting new shows approximately once a week. If you would like to be emailed when new shows are posted, let us know. This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org.
dedicated to encouraging the awareness of ourselves as a one life and providing a meeting ground for those who share that awareness.